This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Carrie Goldberg, in for Meghna Chakrabarty. One of the most notorious unsolved criminal cases in Boston's history could finally be solved. During the 1960s, the Boston Strangler, a serial killer, allegedly raped and murdered at least 11 women and terrorized the city.
Albert DeSalvo, who was in prison for other crimes, confessed to the murders, but he was never charged. Then he was killed in prison. Now, after a half a century, law enforcement officials in Boston say they have DNA evidence linking DeSalvo to the last murder attributed to the Boston Strangler.
DeSalvo's body will now be exhumed so investigators can try to confirm that he raped and murdered 19-year-old Mary Sullivan in her Beacon Hill apartment in 1964.
Now, here to talk about the case a little more is WBUR's Bruce Gellerman, who was at today's news conference. Hey, Bruce.
Hey, Anthony.
So this is pretty exciting news. DeSalvo had confessed to these murders. He was never charged, as we said, and doubts remained about his involvement. Is this going to clear up those doubts?
Not really. This is definitive DNA testing, but not definitive information linked to other murders, except for the last one. Mm-hmm. You know, he was, as you said, a prime suspect in other sexual cases, and he was, you know, being charged at that time. And he later recanted his confession, incidentally, in the Boston Strangler murders. But he had details that did pin him down in some of the cases, especially the last case.
Right. He knew stuff about some of these cases that only the killer could have known.
Seemingly, but there were contradictions and there were inconsistencies. But today, Suffolk County District Attorney Dan Connolly, well, this is what he had to say about the case.
There's a possibility, you know, we continue to comb files and hope that there's some biological evidence left behind.
So let's talk a little bit about the evidence that they've come up with. Why was this testing not done decades ago?
Well, they couldn't do this kind of testing decades ago. In fact, they couldn't do it until about a year ago. They did have DNA testing. It was on the mother's side. They were looking at that. And what it meant is they had to actually use the evidence, destroy the evidence to test it. And this uses a much little piece sample of evidence. They were running out of evidence, actually. And so they took a little bit from Mary Sullivan's blanket, and they tested it using this new procedure, which looks on the farthest side. And what they had to do, Anthony, is they had to get some DNA from DeSalvo, but they haven't done that yet. They got it from one of his relatives just recently off of a water bottle.
Interesting. So from a water bottle, from the DeSalvo family. So what's the DeSalvo family saying about all
this? Well, they're really angry, actually, because the police had to surveil a family member in order to get this water bottle. They're saying, according to the family attorney who was at today's press conference, she said, why didn't you just ask us for the DNA?
Interesting. Now, of course, this has a big effect on the family of Mary Sullivan, who was murdered. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, she had just moved to Boston 4 days earlier from Cape Cod, and when she was murdered in her Beacon Hill apartment. But her nephew, Casey Sherman, has been investigating this case for the last 20 years, almost something of an obsession. And he's always doubted that DeSalvo was the murderer of his aunt. There was, again, inconsistencies in his taped confession. But he was also at today's press conference, and, well, here's what he had to say.
I only go where the evidence leads. And with science being the independent arbiter of guilt or innocence and truth and justice, the information that I've received and have pertained based on what these teams have found provides an incredible amount of closure to myself and my mother.
So that's closure for the case of Mary Sullivan. Do you think investigators will be able to solve the rest of the Boston Strangler murders?
Almost certainly not, because there's very little evidence. In fact, they suggest probably no genetic evidence from those other murders. So the closure, no, and probably solving, no, maybe in this case.
So some closure today, but doubts remain. Bruce Gellerman, WBUR reporter, thanks so much.
You're welcome.
While many questions do remain, today's DNA evidence seems to vindicate people who long thought DeSalvo was the Boston Strangler. Among them is the family of the late Boston detective Phil DiNatale, the lead investigator of the Strangler case. DiNatale's son John and his grandson, Miles David Jewell, made a film about the investigation called Stranglehold, In the Shadow of the Boston Strangler. And Miles is with us on the line. Miles, thank you for joining us.
No, thanks for having me. Real pleasure to be here.
Thanks for coming. So, Miles, your grandfather was convinced that DeSalvo was the Boston Strangler, and today's announcement certainly suggests that he was right. How are you feeling about that?
You know, it's kind of a mixed bag because, you know, obviously our deepest, you know, when I say we, my uncle and I have been working on this together, and basically, you know, our deepest regards and you know, go out to the families of the victim. I mean, they really mm-hmm. suffered a really traumatic loss, and you know, we really feel for them. And hopefully, you know, although this might not be the outcome that they were looking for, they do get some closure with the case because, you know, for us, it's been really about telling my grandfather's story. It was something that he wanted to do until the day he died. I mean, he was suffering from congested heart failure and was literally speaking into a tape recorder trying to put his story just, you know, onto tape so that someday maybe it could get out. And, you know, these days with the kind of digital revolution, we were able to process that and put it out in the form of a documentary. And so, you know, now we finally feel like, okay, well, if this is going to potentially close the case on Mary Sullivan, maybe some of the other cases will be closed as well. And, you know, Phil can finally, you know, rest in peace, so to speak.
Yeah, he can rest in peace. So this has always been a story full of questions. But the one that comes to mind for me now is, you know, we had a confession from DeSalvo back in the 60s, and there was plenty other evidence linking him to the crimes. So how do you understand why so many people were so unconvinced for so long?
Well, you know, we got to keep in mind, too, that you know, it was all circumstantial evidence, right? So there's mm-hmm. never any physical evidence. And the fact that they never linked any physical evidence, you know, for a long time, and especially these days, you know, we're all trained to watch CSI and forensics TV, where at the end of the half hour, the end of the hour, everything's wrapped up and all the crime is, you know, it's solved, and it's solved very definitively. So we've been kind of retrained to think that there always is an answer because science is now kind of pushing those boundaries. Mm-hmm. But, you know, back then it wasn't that. You know, they didn't even have any inkling that this was potentially gonna happen. So they were really working on, you know, anything that they could. And so the confessions became one of the biggest, you know, places that they were then able to say, okay, is this guy the Boston Strangler or isn't he? And one of the huge things that happened was cross-checking those confessions. And essentially, you know, that was literally going through every statement that was made, making sure that DeSalvo couldn't have read that in the newspaper, seen it in the crime scene photographs, autopsy reports, or was it something that only the killer could know? Mm-hmm. And a lot of the kind of alternate theories say, hey, look, he got a lot of these things wrong. And right. the thing that isn't always taken into account is that he was also confessing in 1965 to crimes he committed in 1962. So that's, you know, that's a big 3-year gap, and he was also a very kind of prolific breaking and entering criminal where he broke into numerous homes and sexually assaulted women all over the greater Boston area. So, you know, he also had been breaking into so many different places that, you know, his memory might have got muddled.
Right,
so,
was
yeah.
muddled.
So it's a real interesting discussion about what the detective work was back then and what detective work is now.
Mm-hmm. Actually, one thing that Attorney General Martha Coakley mentioned today was that if these stranglings had taken place nowadays, the DNA database that the police keep now would have solved it right away, right? So in a way, yeah. your grandfather was kind of like a victim of a lack of technology back then.
Yeah. I mean, literally, they were running hand checks at the DMV office to see if they could come up with parking tickets. And, you know, and they had to go through a pile of note cards. You know, it's not like going down to the courthouse and typing in, you know, the name DeSalvo and seeing what type of criminal record you can pull up his rap sheet. I mean, there was none of that. So, you know, it was really, you know, as my grandfather used to say, he called it knuckle and heel detective work.
What he means by that
is that it's, you know, you pound on the doors with your knuckles and you grind down the heels on your shoes walking the street.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's what these guys were doing. And they did a lot of work that has never made it onto the public record because it's also been a cold case. It's been an ongoing investigation. So,
right. And I think we do have to remind ourselves how much harder it was back then. Police officials today were talking about closure, about how now perhaps there may be closure for some of the families of the Boston Strangler's victims. And I wondered about closure for the families of the law enforcement officers who worked on the case, too. I mean, do you think that this will bring your family some kind of closure?
Yeah, I mean, I think what it's going to do is it's not going to let that dark cloud kind of hang around that says, you know, that shadow of a doubt. You know, now, you know, if this does come to fruition and they do start running more DNA testing, there can never be another public debate about it. Whereas, you know, for the past, you know, 20 years since the release of Susan Kelly's book, there's been a strong public debate about, okay, you know, the greatest crimes of the 20th century was Albert DeSalvo, the Boston Strangler. So now, you know, that will put the closure and that will take away that shadow that kind of says, you know, those detectives didn't do their job. They didn't get their guy. And now finally we can say, okay, well, they did get their guy.
Right. Although
we hope so.
Right. But
we hope. We don't know yet.
We hope. Yes. But very briefly, even if they pin down the DNA evidence on Mary Sullivan, what about the other cases that will have not have been solved? Just in 10 seconds, what would you say?
I mean, I just go back to Phil's detective work and the lengths that they went through to cross-check every piece of the confession that DeSalvo said. I mean, there's just so much work that those detectives did to validate their belief that DeSalvo was the strangler.
Got it. Well, thank you so much. Miles David Jewell is the grandson of Chief Boston Strangler Investigator Phil DiNatale and made a film about the case, Stranglehold in the Shadow of the Boston Strangler. Miles, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Stay with us. Up next, the latest from Lac-Mégantic, Quebec, where that runaway freight train exploded in the middle of the village, and what the tragedy might suggest to us about rail transit safety in New England. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Carrie Goldberg. This is Radio Boston.